It's your Tech Update Monday on the Larry Mueller Show. Good morning, I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and our guest is Beth D'Angelo. She has over 20 years of experience in IT and is the senior IT specialist for UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. She's here for the hour to answer your tech questions, whether they're connecting to the internet, hardware, software. You tell her. Call us 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. And Beth, welcome back to the Larry Mueller Show.
Good morning, Lee. Thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
And I want to start with connecting to the internet, because I think oftentimes when you go to connect to the internet and you find that there is no internet connection, you think first thought is your internet service provider's probably down, although I don't think that has been the case as often as it used to be these days, or maybe your router or your modem's not working like it should be. But sometimes the internet itself could be stuttering. And I saw this story from a couple of different places about the end of September, when the online security company Cloudflare reported that they had blocked a DDoS attack that was twice as large as anything they had seen on the internet before. Now, there's a couple words in there that I think probably deserve some explanation. And let's start, Beth, with what a DDoS attack is.
Yeah, DDoS. So that's kind of one of the oldest tricks in the book as far as how to gum up the works when it comes to jamming traffic on the internet. It's called a deliberate denial of service attack. So that's what the DDoS stands for. And essentially what it means is someone is using a number of computing resources to send a vast number of requests to something out on the internet, a server or a group of servers that host certain websites or e-commerce platforms, or even a service provider like a Microsoft or a Google, where it then takes down the infrastructure that manages those sites because they can't handle the amount of requests that are coming at it. Used to happen a lot more back in the day. It's a little bit less common now, but it still does happen, as we can see.
Where do all these attacks come from? How are they, in essence, clogging the internet?
So essentially what happens is somebody can create a piece of malware or a virus that goes out to millions and millions of endpoints or devices. Many of them are infected. That infection can then take over some of the resources of that machine and utilize those resources to perpetuate that attack on a specific target. So they're kind of aggregating resources that they're stealing via malware or viruses out on the internet over time.
So this is coming from, is this a byproduct of the Internet of Things? And is there a way that we play a role in these DDoS attacks?
Yeah, I certainly think that the proliferation of devices that are connected to the internet that have somewhat limited security measures built into them, that Internet of Things that you're talking about, you know, could really contribute to an increase of denial of service attacks utilizing resources like that. So if you have, a Ring doorbell camera mm-hmm. on your house, and that Ring doorbell camera connects to the internet via your Wi-Fi service that you have set up in your home, if that Ring doorbell camera somehow is compromised, it could potentially be used, depending on how the virus is set up and how the attack is structured, as another resource to attack a target from. And there are very few, I think, security measures that are built into some of these devices that can prevent that utilization at the device level.
This attack at the beginning of, or at the end of September, rather, was 22.2 terabytes per second. It's just an overwhelming amount that ends up being twice as large as the previously largest attack, which was just early, at the beginning of September. And this was announced by Cloudflare. What's Cloudflare, Beth?
So Cloudflare is a large organization that produces monitoring and intelligence products for more specifically for commercial use in large organizations for essentially monitoring traffic on the internet, looking for activities that look anomalous, out of the ordinary, a whole lot of traffic going towards one destination that is kind of out of line with that normal behavior. It does track internet traffic behavior and create something we call playbooks, where known behavior is logged, and then seeing things that are outside of those kind of known behavior parameters trigger alerts that they can then send out to users of that service to, you know, let them know that something may be taking place that they want to check into.
I'm wondering whether or not, I'm wondering whether or not the "I am not a robot" box that so many of us have to click now online has something to do with the bigger picture here that we've been talking about with these DDoS attacks and Cloudflare's role on the internet. But first, let's get to a call at 1-800-642-1234, where Jennifer in Sturgeon Bay is standing by. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
What do you have for us, Jennifer?
Yes, I'm here.
Yep. Go ahead.
My question is, what sort of tech jobs are going to be really important to fill in the next few years as, you know, someone who's maybe middle-aged wants to change careers, or younger people who are trying to figure out what kind of career to go into that involves tech and computers?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jennifer. I used to think that, you know, being a computer coder would be an avenue into an IT career. But now I see that artificial intelligence is taking over computer coding. Beth D'Angelo, as you look at the landscape for IT opportunities in the not so distant future and down the road, what do you see?
Yeah, I think, Lee, you were pointing in the right direction when you started discussing AI and what the future looks like as far as the landscape of employment within information technology. It is certainly changing, and just those kind of general programming skills, the ability to write code, the ability to test and debug code, those are still really valuable skills that are highly sought after in IT. So if somebody is going down that path, I certainly wouldn't discourage them from continuing. However, AI in the last 2, 3, 4 years has really started to dominate the conversation, and you don't necessarily need to be an expert in how AI is developed or, creating large language models or developing the machine learning techniques for AI itself. But what really is starting to become in demand is folks who actually know how to use these AI tools. So looking towards training and education and opportunities where some of the tools that are being shaped for maybe some specific markets, if you're looking to get into a specific industry, if there are AI tools that are being developed specific to that industry, I would be looking into training and professional development on how to best utilize those tools. So learning prompting, learning stringing together AI prompts to create AI projects that then allow you to kind of develop a framework for creating more work within. And then using some of the automation that is baked into these AI tools that allows you to connect various IT services to each other to create workflows and to really boost people's efficiency and productivity, and to kind of break down some of those processes that for a long time we've had to either switch between different service providers to finish a process, or we've had to insert some manual processes in between to make them work. So really the utilization of those tools, I think, is going to be huge.
I appreciate the question, Jennifer, because I'm sure that there are plenty of people asking it now, both young and old. So thank you for the call. Let's go next to Mary Kay in Kenosha. Mary Kay, good morning.
Good morning. I'd like a question answered about Wi-Fi. When the owners of apartments put in a life station, okay, without your consent, without any written consent, and it's hooked up to their Wi-Fi, is there a possibility there can be a hack and there's microphone and camera capability?
Whoa. Can you explain a little more, Mary Kay?
Yeah, I'd like to hear more about the life station.
Yeah. Well, there were 14, there's 14 buildings. There's hundreds of people, okay, that live in apartments. And the owners put them in August. And they says, we can't deny them. We can't do anything. We can't move them. They put them on our kitchen table. They says they have to stay here. They're hooked up to their Wi-Fi and not to worry about it. They walked out the door. No book with it. No telephone with it. Nothing. But what I don't believe in Wi-Fi. I believe it harasses your sleep. It bothers your sleep. Okay, so I don't have any Wi-Fi in my house because I don't like it. Mm. So what are the tenants' rights?
I'm not sure we're the best to answer that question, Mary Kay, but it is a pointed question, and I think that your best bet might be a tenant resource center in your area to ask about what you can do and what your rights are as a renter. But when it comes to the technology of Wi-Fi, Beth, you can pull back the veil on that a little bit and explain how that works in a way that we can understand it a little better, maybe?
Yeah, essentially Wi-Fi is using really similar radio frequencies to what our folks of us, you know, like me who grew up with landline phones. Some of us had wireless landline phones or cordless phones. Cordless phones operate at a similar frequency as Wi-Fi signals.
Hmm.
So they transmit radio signals through the air that contain data. And then that is received on the other end by a device like your cell phone, your smartphone, or like you're talking about now, this LifeStation medical alert. Sounds like it has the ability to probably send and receive Wi-Fi signals from that device if it is in your home. If it's something that you don't want to have in there, it's certainly something you can take up with the management of your residence. Or like we said, a tenant resource center.
Yeah.
But those signals are going to be traveling through the building, whether or not that device is in your specific apartment. There's really not a good way to block Wi-Fi signals from entering a specific location.
But when you make the comparison, Beth, to a cordless phone, I remember the days when your cordless phone could pick up your neighbor's cordless phone and you guys would have a, share a line for a moment until you switch channels on the cordless phone. And Mary Kay mentioned the possibility of being hacked or having some sort of intrusive device attached to these life stations. Is it possible that these hubs could be commandeered in the same or a similar way to what our wireless phones used to be?
I mean, I can't say that it isn't possible. Mm-hmm. I think it's very improbable. I think that the likelihood of there not being any encryption on the Wi-Fi signal that's being sent from the main hub device that life station is connected to, any real devices that we have coming out, that are Wi-Fi connected in modern times include some pretty high-level encryption for the signal as it travels. So it's not like the old cordless phones where those were really unencrypted, raw radio signals, where if you were running at the same frequency as someone else's phone and you were near enough to each other, you might be able to pick up each other's calls. That doesn't happen anymore with encryption.
Mary Kay, I hope you find the answers you're looking for, and sorry we couldn't be of more help today. Our guest is Beth D'Angelo. She's worked in IT for more than 20 years now. She's a senior IT specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology for your Tech Update Monday on The Larry Mueller Show. And we invite you to the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us anytime to talk at WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and you're listening to WPR News. I'm just saying, just because we all have a camera in our cell phone doesn't make us all photographers. So we'll spend the next hour on The Larry Mueller Show talking about how you can get the best picture. You know, the one that is worth a thousand words. We'll talk to an owner of a camera shop in Oshkosh and a photojournalist who has been around the world next hour. So I hope you can stay with us right now. Beth D'Angelo, our guest, senior IT specialist for UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology, with your Tech Update Monday, answering your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk at WPR.org. We'll go to Kathy in Oconomowoc next. Kathy, good morning.
Hi, good morning. I've got a question about, I get an error message on my computer when I try to go online. Now, this doesn't happen all the time. And at first, I thought it had something to do with my new router. because it happened with my old computer, and I've got a new computer, so I don't know if it's the router or if it's my antivirus program, but I come up with this error message, DNS address can't be found. And when I'm trying to go and put in a web address of something I'm looking for online, and sometimes I can get on the internet, no problem. I have contacted my antivirus company, and they helped me out for a while, it seemed like, unless it just happened to be timing with me getting onto the internet, and they had used, I let them go through my computer and change things on it and take out the antivirus program and then put it back in. And then it seemed to work for a while, but it might be a timing thing when I'm going online. And now the DNS address can't be found is coming back again.
Kathy, what web browser do you typically use?
Windows 11.
Okay. Beth, the DNS underscore address, something I've seen before myself, but not consistently.
Yeah, so a couple of different things could be happening, and Lee, you started to hit on it. One of the points I was going to make as far as the browser that you're using, sounds like you're using the built-in Microsoft Edge browser that comes with Windows 11, and that's certainly a viable option and something you should be able to use without getting that error. The thing I would try first would be to download another browser and see if you get the same error going to the same website with a different browser.
Which one would you suggest,
something
Beth?
Like, Chrome is a great option. I use Chrome every day. That's a great one to start with. It's real simple. It's not very different from Edge as far as the user interface, so it won't be a big change to try it out. But I would see if you get the same response when you try it in a different browser. That'll let you kind of rule out the browser as the issue. So if you are able to get to that same address with a different browser, then there may be something wrong with the Microsoft Edge install on your computer. But you did mention that you have a new computer, and this is something that was happening on the old one and is now also happening on the new one. So that, you know, points me in a little bit of a different direction. That maybe your security software, your antivirus software, if you have the same software on the old one and the new one, that may be causing the issue. And I would try disabling it on the new computer and going to the same address to see if it resolves. If you disable that security software and you're able to get to it, then we know that your security software is somehow blocking access to whatever website you're trying to get to, and it may be something you need to take up with that vendor.
I hope that helps, Kathy, and thank you so much for your call. We'll go to Jack and Merrimack next. I should have started with this, Jack. I should have started with this today because I think that you, me, and others are all thinking about it. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. The first question that I have has to do with system updates. I have a Mac, and it has a whole bunch of really high-quality, expensive 32-bit software on it. And the latest Mac updates do not recognize 32-bit software. It would cost me thousands to redo things like Microsoft Office or the entire Adobe suite, the full Photoshop, the whole publication thing, the whole work. So I don't know if there's any answer to this other than to keep my old system and limp through some of the websites that don't recognize that software anymore. Is there any answer to this?
That is interesting because, as I understand it, most software these days comes in 16-bit or 32-bit, and it seems to be moving more towards a 32-bit software structure. But I had not heard that a Mac and Apple update would eliminate that 32-bit software from working, Beth?
Yeah, so this is kind of a recent thing, like you mentioned, to the Apple iOS update. So it has been for a long time that 32-bit app compatibility was pretty standard in most operating systems, and 64-bit was kind of the upgraded, more powerful processing version. So a lot of more secure apps were requiring 64-bit, which meant you needed a 64-bit operating system in order to run them. And then Microsoft has, with Windows 11, I think they still offer a 32-bit and a 64-bit version. Hmm. However, Apple has now deprecated 32-bit, which means they're considering it end of life.
Wow.
And moving everything as of June towards 64-bit applications. So as that happens, newer applications that come out for the Mac OS are likely to be released in that 64-bit platform and not compatible with an older 32-bit operating system.
What's Jack going to do with all his 32-bit software?
Keep the old OS. Don't update to the new version.
Yep.
It is going to be likely end of life for security updates, so I would make sure you've got some third-party antivirus and security software on that particular machine. And if you want something that is more up-to-date for running, you know, things that you'd be worried about running on a less secure machine, I would look to upgrading your hardware, getting a new Apple.
Speaking of end-of-life security updates, tomorrow is the big day for Windows 10 from Microsoft. They have, as I understand it, will not be offering security updates for Windows 10 operating system moving forward. And there are plenty of people with hardware and computers that don't have what they need to upgrade to Windows 11. What are folks supposed to do who are stuck with Windows 10 after tomorrow, Beth?
Yeah, it's still going to work.
Okay.
It's not like it's just going to stop functioning after tomorrow. So you'll still be able to use your PC that's running Windows 10 just like you always did. End of support, what that means is that Microsoft is no longer going to be providing technical support for any issues. So if you contact Microsoft with a problem with Windows and you're still running Windows 10, they're not going to help you out. They're also no longer going to be releasing any software updates for it. So any bugs that are existing in Windows 10 are going to continue to exist. And then no more security updates or fixes. So as new security vulnerabilities are discovered, they won't be releasing patches to fix those vulnerabilities.
This, Beth D'Angelo, our guest, senior IT specialist for UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. It's a Tech Update Monday on the Larry Mueller Show. And it brings me to the bigger picture we've seen recently about the debate over data centers. Because as Jack brings up, hey, my stuff, it cost me thousands of dollars, but it's going to be made obsolete by the people I bought it from. Windows 10 users wondering how long they'll be able to hold on to the hardware they have that can't upgrade to Windows 11. We have stories at WPR.org about the data centers and the push and pull and debate over data centers that are looking to come to Wisconsin, build here, use our energy and our water, and then provide access to the Internet of Things and artificial intelligence. But there seems to be a big debate about these data centers. And one of the issues that I wonder from your perspective about, Beth, is the obsolescence of technology and how that plays into the debate over the to build or whether or not to build or not to build data centers in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I hadn't really thought of it much in the sense of the, you know, how quickly things obsolesce in our fast-paced technology world now, that building things out of brick and mortar seems to be kind of a bad investment to a community. It feels like that's the trend as far as technology goes. A lot of promises that are made by the time something is built can no longer be fulfilled because the market has moved on. So that is a big risk that I think communities take when they are going all in on allowing big tech companies to build these massive data centers close to or within their communities.
When they're building these data centers, I mean, aren't they building it with some of the similar chips and technology that we have at home? What's going on inside the black box, Beth?
Well, so data centers essentially are a large warehouse for computer hardware. What usually populates those data centers is a lot of racks full of servers. And those servers, you know, depending on what the data center is housing, let's say, for instance, it's an AI company, usually it's going to be a lot of processing power. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have thousands and thousands and thousands of processors running in a building all at one time, processing data that generates a whole lot of heat, requires an awful lot of power, and kind of leaves a bit of environmental calamity in its wake. So there are a lot of consequences to building these huge server farms and the resources that they consume and the waste that they leave behind.
And the question about how long the technology that's put inside there will last.
Exactly. I mean, it's going to have to be updated. Well, thankfully, hardware tends to follow a little bit of a slower cycle than software.
Okay.
As far as the generations of technology. So chipsets aren't, you know, turning over in major leaps and bounds as far as the changes of the physical technology. But what is changing very quickly is software and platforms where things are existing and living and access to them.
When you talk about these data centers having thousands and thousands of processors, how many processors does my PC have?
Usually it's typically just one.
Okay.
sometimes you might have a dual core processor, so you might have two. You may have a quad core processor, which has like four core chipsets on a single processor head. But usually your computer has one central processing unit, that's your CPU.
Mm-hmm.
A server likely has more than that, because it's going to be handling a lot more traffic. It's going to be doing a lot more input output. There's going to be a lot more demand put on that server as a resource than would be on just your regular laptop at home. So that's when things start to grow exponentially, where you can have a single server that has, you know, tens, dozens, hundreds of core processing units within it.
Oh, wow. Let's go back to your questions now at 1-800-642-1234 with our guest, Beth D'Angelo, on this Tech Update Monday on the Larry Mueller Show. Perry and Oconto, good morning.
Hello, and hi, Beth. My question is this on routers. I have an old system. I'm one of those holdouts that can't up anymore, but I have a router, and I'm hooked up to DSL, so I'm way back in the Stone Age, but I got two routers. They're exactly the same, and I don't use Wi-Fi. I just plug in direct to a desktop, and that's what I like using.
Sure.
But if I have a second router that's never been used, and I'm not sure if I'm having router issues or not, or how I could even tell, but could I just plug the new one into the plugins and just take out the old one, and they're just exactly the same?
Exactly the same, but you may have had some setup for that old router back in the day, Perry. Do you remember anything about how you had to set up that router or what happened when you plugged it in?
It's been a long
time. All right, so for that, we go to Beth D'Angelo for our answers. And I dread the...
I'd never be able to remember how I did it in the first place. I would have to go back through it, too. I get it. Even if it was last year, I'd still have to go through and reverse
right.
engineer what I did the first time, because, of course, I don't write it down. But here is a good tip. If you want to try that, I would suggest plugging the new router in and giving it a go. But before you do that, I would go out on the internet and I would search the make and model of the router you're using, and download a copy of the manual if you don't have it still, or if it's a, you know, just a file, a PDF version of the manual for that piece of equipment, so you can look up if there is anything you need to do to configure it, or if it just works out of the box. And then you can write down what you need to write down from the old router and set it up on the new one. Or it may tell you that it's just plug and play and you're ready to go when you plug it in, but...
But if it had a login and password, Beth, and you didn't set up that login and password, doesn't that make it vulnerable to be employed by those DDoS attacks that we were talking about earlier, those denial of service clogging the internet arteries?
Oh, you're serving me up a great security softball here. So I'm going to make a plug for any time you set up a new router in your home with internet service, that you go into the administrative site for that router, and there will be information on how to do that within the manual that comes with your router. It tells you how to get to the admin page or the admin site for your router. Please go into that and set a username and password for the administrative control or access to that router. If you don't, most routers have a default. Often the username is admin and the password is blank, or the password is admin. It's very easy to find this information if somebody knows what type of router you have. It's very easy for them to just try a few passwords and find the right one. And then they have control over everything connected to your Wi-Fi in your home. So please, 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 when you put a new router in place, or if you have a router and you've never done this, take a look at that documentation, see if it has a default username and password. Try going to that site with that default username and password. If it works, likely your router is vulnerable to compromise.
Is this why I'm always having to prove that I am not a robot on the internet that seems to be increasingly proliferating with robots?
I mean, it's not necessarily the reason, but it's kind of, well, it's a similar, I guess,
what's going
area
on there?
Of thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're talking about the I am not a robot. Tell me, you know, which boxes contain a bus.
Pick the motorcycles. Yeah.
Or, you know, complete this puzzle. Yeah, it's fun. At first, I thought it was just my browser trying to play some fun games with me, but it's actually a real reason for it, and not me just trying to, you know, convince my browser that I am not a robot.
What's the reason?
So, yeah, really, it's a security measure, and what it's designed to do is to prevent bots, which are kind of just an automated AI agent, as we call them, that can access things on the internet by, you know, it's programmed to do so. It's trying to access websites to do whatever. This is a defense mechanism for that website to tell whether or not whatever is trying to access its resources is a human being trying to access it or a bot trying to access it. And it does that actually not by whether or not you know if something is a bus, but by the behavior of your mouse and your cursor and how you click on things.
Oh, isn't that
weird?
It can
tell that you're human based on behavior patterns rather than a bot that is trying to emulate behavior patterns.
And the purpose of this is to try to control the traffic to these sites so that it's actual human beings who are visiting or engaging on these sites and not just some online automation.
Some website and creates 100,000 fake accounts.
Yep.
Because it's programmed to do so, and it can trick the website into thinking it's 100,000 people doing that rather than just a single bot.
So we're going to have to, I imagine, going forward, continue to prove that we are indeed not robots.
Correct.
Jim in Middleton emailed us. He wants to know if virus protection services like Trend or McAfee stop potential threats after Windows 10 is no longer supported by Microsoft, which is slated for tomorrow.
Yeah, I believe they're still going to be releasing updates for whatever version of antivirus software you have. It's not tied to the version of Windows that you're running, but what may happen is as new versions of that software are released, that those will not be released with backwards compatibility to Windows 10. So you may not be able to upgrade in the future.
Beth D'Angelo, our guest, it's our Tech Update Monday, and your questions are welcome at 1-800-642-1234 or talk at WPR.org. And we still have to get to this dead internet theory and what's behind it and whether or not it could come to fruition. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and you're listening to WPR News. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and it's your Tech Update Monday with Beth D'Angelo. She's a senior IT specialist for UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology and answering your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or talk at WPR.org. Let's go to Elizabeth in Baraboo next. Elizabeth, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thank you. What do you have for us today?
So you guys were just talking about the CAPTCHAs to prove that you are not a bot to
yes.
access certain websites. And I have my security settings up pretty high on my browsers. I use some like anonymization on Firefox to
sure.
prevent tracking. And I will fail those not a bot every time. And there are certain websites I just can't access because of it. So I'm wondering, how do I get around that? And is there a happy medium for those of us who are concerned about privacy and security?
Absolutely. And Elizabeth, are you sure you're not a bot?
No, you know, I wonder sometimes.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Beth, what can Elizabeth do?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things you can try if that issue keeps happening. And, you know, it usually centers around how your browser is collecting things like cookies and is tracking specific things. And if you have your privacy settings kind of dialed in really stringent, it could block some of the mechanisms that are being used to display or to relay that CAPTCHA information. So it's kind of counterintuitive. Your security is negating their security. you know, it's like a double negative. But a couple of things you can try in your browser to stop that from happening would be clearing the cache and the cookies, which is probably a setting that you've got set up to do automatically when you close your browser. But if it isn't, I would go in and clear that out just to clear out any junk that might be creating the problem. If you have any browser extensions turned on, I'd try turning those off to see if it removes the problem. And if you have anything set to, like, do not track for Cloudflare access, I would turn that off in your privacy settings because they have some privacy settings set to specific sites or extensions. And if you have the do not track setting turned on, it may block that Cloudflare access.
So Elizabeth's security is blocking the internet security and it negates both, which brings us to the dead internet theory, Beth D'Angelo. Yeah. Can you explain? this is how the internet dies. Beth, explain the theory for us.
It's actually not how the internet dies, which you'd think, you know, just all of our security negating everything and nobody can get to anything would be a pretty good explanation for why the internet is dead or dying or why people are saying that. But it's actually, it's a totally different topic.
Huh.
And a really interesting one at that. It's really more related to, again, AI, which is kind of the topic of all IT conversation these days. But the theory posits that the internet is kind of dead or is in its last death throes due to the fact that a lot of the activity and content that's out there now, including a lot of social media accounts and posts, are really predominantly being created and by like automated artificial intelligence agents or bots. So they're created rapidly with AI-generated content, and they're really just designed to farm engagement, to get engagement, to get clicks, to get likes, to get comments.
But then the engagement's coming from other automations, so that the automation, these artificial intelligence, these bots or robots are online, they're generating content, they're replying to themselves, they're commenting to each other, but all of a sudden there's no human beings in the mix.
And then it's dead.
How do we know when we reach the dead internet?
I guess when no one's out there, no physical people are actually using it anymore. It's just things. I think that may be what the Internet of Things is talking about, where it's just the things using it and not the people.
Well, I hope they like our post, Beth.
They're not ours anymore. They're posting.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh. I know. It's crazy.
But there is some
truth.
Really, I mean,
like, there's some truth to it.
Yes.
And it's really about understanding that when you're using popular platforms like TikTok and Facebook and Instagram and whatever else the kids are using these days, if those particular platforms use ads to generate revenue, then the content within those platforms is probably going to be or become dominated by AI-generated content.
That's just a fact.
Huh.
Say that again. So if it's an advertising and content that at some point we are moving towards the automation of all of this.
Yes.
Okay. And that would be a dead internet.
Clicks equals revenue.
Yeah.
Right. Clicks equals ad sales equals revenue. Generate more clicks. Create more content to generate more clicks. Automate the generation of content to create more clicks, to create more ad revenue, to create more money.
But the clicks are coming from inside the internet.
At some point, well, and that's why they have CAPTCHA, so that they can tell you're not a robot. So it may be that we have to use a CAPTCHA for everything we interact with going on, or there may need to be some other mechanism for determining that it is a person and not a bot that is interacting with some form of content or who is producing some form of content. I don't know what that looks like, but I think that may be the next step that we're looking at.
If that's the case, I feel sorry for Elizabeth, and the internet is dead for her. Well, let's get back to
your
questions with the time we have left. Mary and Madison, we'll go to you next. Good morning.
Good morning. Over the weekend, in the process of trying to print out a series of bank statements using the printer symbol, suddenly I couldn't it wouldn't allow me to print anymore. So, but my I can print a test sheet off of my printer. Mm-hmm. I can print, if I download a document and use the Control P to print, okay, I'd like to go and print off the puzzles from the daily e-newspaper.
Yeah.
Using, again, that printer symbol.
Well, this to me, Mary, sounds, yeah, it sounds like if you're able to print from your computer but not from your web browser, that maybe it's your web browser that's disconnected to your printer, but it sounds like your computer is connected to your printer. Your printer is printing. So I feel like, Beth, we've sort of narrowed down the place where there could be a problem.
Lee, are you looking for a new job?
Hey,
you can use people like you with your troubleshooting
skills.
Beth,
I want you to know I was a computer science major for 3 semesters. Three.
I did not know that, Lee, but I really like where your brain is going, and I wouldn't have anything different to say. It sounds to me also like it's your browser that's having trouble, and it may not. A good way to test it is, instead of using that little printer icon, would be to go to the actual file menu of your browser. If you click on file and drop it down, there should be a print option in that file menu, and click on print and see if it pops up a print dialog window where it actually asks you, you know, if you want to print this thing and how many pages of it.
And when you go into that dialog, you may find that your printer's been disconnected from your web browser, but it should be an option there because your computer already recognizes it, as I understand it. The other option I would think, Beth, is if you could download that content or save the web page to your hard drive, that way you could bypass the printer option in your web browser and just print directly from the file that you saved to your hard drive, which sounds like still works for Mary.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Definitely, you could try downloading the file and then opening it in whatever program the file was created in. It sounds to me, though, you did mention these are bank statements that you were trying to print, and likely those are opening up in a PDF.
Mm-hmm.
Inside your browser. So it may be that the PDF extension isn't working properly. Instead of opening the PDF in your browser, your suggestion of downloading it and then opening it, Lee, may kind of go around if that add-in or that link to the Acrobat PDF reader isn't working properly.
So, yeah, if you don't have the free Adobe Acrobat reader, I believe that might be something you could download, and it should not cost you a dime.
Nope, you can download it. And in fact, when you download the file, often Adobe will take you to a screen if you don't have the reader downloaded already.
Okay.
It'll take you to a screen to download it right away.
Yep, it sounds like you're close, Mary, and maybe just a few clicks away, whether that's in your file menu, whether you can save the PDF, or maybe you need to download the Adobe Acrobat Reader, which is for free and will not cost you any money. Which brings us to Rich's email from Chippewa Falls. Rich has the basic McAfee computer protection on his home PC, but McAfee keeps suggesting that Rich needs their many extra services beyond the basic for charge. How can you tell what extra services you need, and is the basic service enough for a home PC, Beth?
Yeah, I'm just taking a look at McAfee's various subscription plans that they have right now and what they all contain. It looks like their basic plan is also called the Essential.
Mm-hmm.
And it does, let's see, it does some identity protection. It does VPN, it does antivirus. So if you upgrade to their premium, you end up with some identity monitoring. Oh, no, you have that in the... Oh, what do you get that you don't have?
You get upsold.
Scans. You get scans. personal data clean. Oh, yeah, okay. So they're with their premium upgrade, they're trying to get you to buy into a service that looks online for account and personal data of yours and cleans that off the internet.
Which I imagine if you'd been hacked or your identity had been stolen may be of value, but if you are just using your online PC, you recognize that they're just looking to make a little money and may not be in your best interest to upgrade.
Yeah, I think if you're concerned about your digital information being out on the internet, then you may want to sign up for that service to see if that works for you. But I don't know if it's worth an extra It looks like it's an extra $10 a year. To do that. And maybe it's worth it to try for a year.
Yeah. Let us know what you think, Rich, and thank you for the email. Let's go to Scott in Kenosha next. Scott, we're running short on time, but wanted to make sure we got to you. Thanks for holding on.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Great.
So this question might be a little bit deep for you. I'm not sure, but I'm a sports director here in Kenosha, and we produce and direct all the high school sports.
Yeah.
So like high school football and basketball and stuff. And what we do is we stream it live. And so I'm running into a problem with my streaming device. I have connectivity. I have my own network. And so I have a Wi-Fi router, and I have bars. But from time to time, I keep losing my stream. Is there anything you could do to help me with that?
What are you using for a streaming device?
So I'm using something called a JVC Pro HD, which takes multiple cameras and microphones and inputs them, and then that talks to my laptop, which streams via YouTube.
Okay. All right. I'm just taking a look at this particular product to see if there's any like known issues out there with it specifically. So that camera streams directly to your Wi-Fi access point, and then you have computer connected on the same Wi-Fi. I would think maybe distance could be an issue if the device itself isn't very close to your Wi-Fi access point, you might be losing some of the signal. So that may drop it. Pretty much anything that may disrupt a Wi-Fi signal in any other device.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I would walk around the area and see where your signal dips.
Well, and I'd wonder if there is a way to plug in actually and use your cables to bypass Wi-Fi, because that can be intermittent. And if you're looking to stream online, you'd want as pure of a internet connection as possible. So a Cat 5 cable.
Or at least like, or a mesh Wi-Fi system to just increase your signal and your coverage.
Yeah, which I understand budgets may be limited for high school football in Kenosha, Scott, and really appreciate what you're doing. And would like an update next month if you're available and let us know how that goes. I, with the time we have left, Beth, I want to ask you about, and we just have a couple of minutes, backup, storage backup, because data loss horror stories are the worst horror stories, and you only need to hear one to know what to do. Where should I go with my data? Should I get external hard drives? What are these network-attached storage? Should I rely on the cloud? What's my best bet?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different ways you could go. Certainly, I don't think you need to go so far as like a network-attached storage device unless you are backing up an awful lot of data and you want to spend a lot of money. But if you're just a standard user with a couple of computers or a laptop and a desktop or, you know, 3-4 devices in your house that you want to back up, I use a cloud service called Carbonite. I've been using it for many years. Mm-hmm. It's a cloud backup. I use it as a scheduled backup, and it does what we call intermittent backups. So it only backs up data that has changed since the last time it was backed up. So I'm not sending a whole lot of stuff every time.
And does that do it automatically for you?
Yes, it does. So you just set up the schedule that you want it to happen. You tell it what you want it to back up, when you want it to do the backup. And it does it for me, and then it just sends me a notification letting me know if it's been successful or if there are any failures or any errors.
What about free cloud services like Google's Drive or Microsoft's, what is it, OneDrive?
I would only use them for things you need to access on a regular basis from multiple devices.
Okay.
That's really for like active data cloud storage that you need to be able to get to from wherever you are. If we're talking about backing up like all of your photos and videos and everything that's on your hard drive, you definitely don't want to use a cloud storage service for that. It's going to get very expensive very quickly.
And you use Carbonite. And Beth, I apologize. Yep. We're out of time, but I want to thank you so much for yours today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Lee. Great to talk to you.
It was a pleasure. Beth D'Angelo, Senior IT Specialist at UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. And we'll have your tech update again on Monday next month. Coming up, we spent an hour figuring out how to take the best photographs, how to capture that moment in a way that is worth 1,000 words. We'll start with a camera shop owner on Main Street in Oshkosh and then talk to a photojournalist from Oshkosh who has gone around the world with the help of his camera. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show.